Hey, welcome into Stone Cold Stros. I'm Brandon Strange alongside Charlie Polillo and Sports Talk 790's Josh Jordan. You can follow them on X at Polillo and at Josh Jordan SCS. On today's episode, the bad news is if it weren't for poor luck on player health, the Astros would have no luck at all. The good news is you've got us to vent with. So speaking of venting, Dana Brown says the pitching staff having over 100 walks this time of year is unacceptable. I agree. I hope he fires whoever put the staff together. Charlie and Josh, welcome in. Look, we try not to make too much of a single series, but it feels like the three games against St. Louis did seem to be emblematic of Houston's 2026 season to this point. Pitchers struggling to find clean innings, meaningless home runs from Yordan, runners stranded, and of course, players going to the IL. Charlie, I want to start with pitching, though, because for a team with a lot of flaws, the pitching staff is their glaring flaw. What did you guys see from the pitching over these past three games?
For the most part, garbage in, garbage out. They do not have a competitive major league starting rotation. Will it stay this bad? Unlikely. To still be giving up more than six runs per game on average this deeply into the season. Just 1/7 of the way into the season. But that's not a bad weekend or a bad week. We're coming up on a month of just absolute trash. When you go into a series starting Peter Lambert, not a has-been, a never-was, who you basically scrap heap, and hey, go start, and that the results weren't very good, only a fool would be shocked there. Lance McCullers can talk about how I think I'm throwing the ball well, results-driven business. Lance McCullers, kind of standard fare, five innings, takes 91 pitches, gives up a few hits, walks multiple batters, earned run average now at 6.20. And then, hey, the one point of light for 4 2/3 innings, Mike Burrows in the Sunday finale. Perfect. More than halfway to a perfect game. And then he unravels, can't even get out of that fifth inning. We can get to the bullpen, but it still starts with the starting rotation. Theirs is worse than abysmal. As constituted, this is just a crappy baseball team.
Yep. You hit on it right there. I think the one thing with the pitching, at least they're consistent over the course of the season. They're dead last in ERA, but you shrink it down to the last 15 days. Guess what? Dead last in ERA, 6.96. They're a full run, more than a full run worse than the second to last place team in team ERA. That's how bad they are right now with the pitching. What concerns me is I think this is going to get worse before it gets better. And you say, well, how is that? Well, right now, over the course of the season, the Astros are first in run scored. They're tied for that. But if you look over the last 15 days, they're 15th. They're also 15th in OPS. So the offense is coming back to earth while the pitching just continues to be the worst in baseball. That is not a formula for success.
Starting pitching that virtually never goes deeply into the game. I mean, they don't have one guy who at the outset of the ball game, you're thinking, hey, I feel there's a reasonable chance he'll go six and lessen the load on the bullpen and reduce the number of guys you need out of that bullpen to all come in and do good work in a decent game. But our last get together, I said, hey, they had to have a winning homestand for it to be a good homestand, right? 500 wouldn't cut it playing the Rockies and the Cardinals, who are off to a surprisingly good start. We'll see where they end up. But where the Astros were at coming into this thing, it's 6-11. And then to go 2-4 after winning the first two games against the Rockies, not quite disastrous, but working on it. The patience, it's way too early, especially in what the American League West is showing collectively to this point, to say the patient is terminal, but a serious condition. Because where is the pathway to a competent, not a good, just a competent, a passable starting rotation? Who the heck knows when Hunter Brown gets back? You know, that's where it starts in their rotation, and it's supposed to end on the back end with Josh Hader. Well, to the 60-day IL for him. So, hey, he could be back the day before Memorial Day. So that's a third of the season down the crapper with Josh Hader, while the Astros overall seem to be spiraling down the toilet. But let me add, they haven't missed Josh Hader. He has thrown eight innings so far. And Josh Hader comes in when they have a lead in the ninth inning. The Astros have had the lead going to the ninth inning seven times this season, eight times this season. The Astros have won every game that they have led after six innings, that they have led after seven innings, and that they have led after eight innings. So while Brian Abreu has been the one-man SS Titanic and there's been other leaks in the ship, the Astros have not blown one game yet in the late innings. The problem is they're usually behind in the late innings. And for all the gaudy early stats, and Josh, you mentioned the last couple of weeks, and there are multiple culprits I'm sure we'll get to on that. The Astros, I mentioned, they haven't lost a game. They've been ahead after six. They haven't won a game. They've trailed after six. Right? Forget a dramatic ninth inning comeback. When behind after six innings, they're 0-13. So, yeah, a number of those games, if you're behind 8-2, 9-3, what do you expect? But they've been in games that haven't been out of reach. Sunday, they flirted with it, coming back to tie the game, and then the 10th inning happened. 8-15 is an appreciable chunk of the season. It doesn't condemn this team to being 90-loss bad, but it's absolutely conceivable.
Yeah, we hit on this last episode, which is this debate that is going on right now amongst Astros fans, whether the state of the pitching staff is someone's fault, with one side saying that the team is just having an incredibly unlucky run of injuries going back to last season, the other side saying that this pitching staff is just poorly constructed, and not having Hunter Brown and Josh Hader is not an excuse to have the league's worst ERA. And I'll reiterate what I said last episode, which is Brown and Hader are big losses. Although, Charlie, again, you pointed out Hader's loss is almost offset by the lack of save opportunities this team has had. Although we know he'd be pitching innings because, quite frankly, they've needed length out of the bullpen from everyone because so many times the starters haven't been able to go deep. And let's look at the other parts of the staff. While he is on the IL, Imai is technically not injured, save for arm fatigue. Javier, Sosa, Pearson are on the IL, but those aren't guys you could have reasonably counted on other than hope. Brian Abreu isn't hurt other than mentally, but he's become unplayable outside of Espada's so desperately needing guys to pitch because of the short lengths that the starting rotation goes, that he almost has to throw him. So I fall on the roster construction side of this debate. I want to get more onto the offensive side, as you guys have alluded to. Before we do, let's take a minute for Stone Cold Cruz. That's where you get in touch with our sponsor, Nat Labant at Cruz Planners. And it's in the name. Nat can help you plan your next cruise, but in truth, he can help save you on all your travel needs. But cruises are his specialty, and he can save you hundreds of dollars versus booking it yourself. And just as importantly, he can save you time because he knows where all those best deals are at. And he knows what cruises and what plans and options fit your budget, whether it's something as short as a 5-day Caribbean cruise for two, starting at under $1,000, or a 7-day Alaskan cruise with airfare and unlimited beverage package included for $4,600, or an extravagant riverboat cruise. Your options are just endless, and Nat can help you get started. So go to stonecoldcruise.com and fill out the form to get that conversation started, or call Nat and Jenny directly at 281-892-1150. Tell them you heard about it on Stone Cold Stros. So let's get into the offense. As of late, the offense has basically been Yordan, Altuve, and to a lesser extent, Cam Smith and Christian Vasquez. As of the St. Louis series, it's Loperfido joining Pena and Myers on the IL. Isak and Yiner are basically with them on spirit. After Walker's hot start, he's hitless 9 of his last 10 games. The offense is still putting up numbers, but still stranding a ton of guys. I don't want to be overly negative here, although it's hard not to given the state of the team. But I do wonder what you guys think. Is this an offense that this team can count on should the pitching somehow miraculously come out of this nosedive they find themselves in?
First, anyone whining about negativity, look, they're 2-12, their last 14 games. So unless your head's lodged up your butt or you want hear no evil, see no evil under any circumstances, in which case, consume other product, I guess. The Astros on paper do not have a big-time offense. Jeremy Pena's absence, absolutely a factor. But where is Jeremy Pena going to fall when he gets back? The guy who the first two-thirds of last season was having his big breakthrough? Or more like the guy who his first 3 years was consistently no better than mediocre and after returning from injuries, faltered badly down the stretch until his other injury? Carlos Correa does not look good so far. One home run in 23 games, five doubles, slap hitter, basically, hitting barely 250, OPS barely over 700. He struggles with fastballs. I think he guess hits more, which is why he's prone to take called third strikes. You nailed it on Christian Walker. Hey, of course you want to latch onto something promising and encouraging. And Walker got off to the great start. It was a start. It was 2 weeks. He went 3-for-4 in the series at Colorado. Anybody can hit at Colorado. But the nine games surrounding that game, the four before and the five since, Christian Walker's 0-for-25. This is he's been promoted to the cleanup spot in the lineup because what else? With Paredes and OPS under 600. Yiner almost up to 500 with his hit. OPS, not batting average or slugging. Cam Smith, 3-for-25. Had a hot start. It didn't mean Cam Smith had established himself as a star. So the lineup is very leaky. Very leaky. And when you're claiming guys who are of no use to the Chicago White Sox, Dustin Harris, because what else do we have as an outfield possibility? Cooper Hummel, after all, is no longer in the organization. Taylor Trammell is, and he plays every day. And hey, to his credit, he had a couple of hits, that fly ball triple in the corner, and then an infield single in the 10th inning. But he is Taylor Trammell, that against the Cardinals' left-handed starting pitcher, Joe Espada wouldn't even start Bryce Matthews, going with Shea Whitcomb, who hit basically a garbage time home run on Saturday, and Taylor Trammell, 177 career hitter, to go with him lefty against lefty. Bryce Matthews shouldn't be in the major leagues. And that's setting aside him being used as a pinch runner in the eighth inning and promptly getting picked off, and then in the 10th committing an error on a ground ball, facilitating the Cardinals' three-run 10th that basically put that game out of reach. Bryce Matthews is 3-for-28 with 16 strikeouts. I don't know if he'll ever get there in terms of putting bat on ball to be a legit major leaguer, but hardly playing, especially if you're not going to start him against a lefty, to go with Whitcomb and Trammell, he should be at Sugarland.
To your point, Brandon, about do you blame the construction of the roster or the manager? Bryce Matthews falls on Dana Brown. So far, that draft pick hasn't worked out. But the way he was used, and Charlie brought it up, I was going to get to it. Pinch hitting for Paredes, who got you a big hit and got you back in the game. And the game's only tied. You know there's a possibility the lineup might circle back around and you might need Paredes again. And then Matthews gets picked off, then has a terrible error at third base, a position he hasn't been playing very much lately, by the way. And that was huge in that spot. So I put that on a spot. I thought that was a poor decision when he did it. Immediately, I was like, did Paredes' legs tighten up again? Why are you pulling him out of the game? There's two outs. I just didn't think Matthews was going to score, and he didn't. He got picked off. So I think both need to take heat for this. And as far as the offense goes, if we look at that sample size over the last 2 weeks, they're middle of the pack. I think before the season started, we kind of figured maybe they'd be a top third offense, middle of the pack. So this might be who they are. But we were at least assuming the pitching would once again be dominant, and it's absolutely awful. So they're in a tricky spot here. It's a good thing I'm not an owner of a team, because I would want to fire somebody after this. I get too emotional and upset. But I'm not even sure which guy I would want to get rid of. It's all bad all around.
When a team finds themselves in the state that Houston is in, there's always plenty of blame to go around. But you guys hit on it. I was going to talk about it. Watching a team's one of their top prospects flounder is very frustrating, especially considering when the team starts off like this, you have to start looking big picture. What are the tent poles of this team long term? What can they build on? But Bryce is shaping up to be a gigantic bust. Second most strikeouts on the team, even though he's only played 13 games, I think 14 as of Sunday. He has more strikeouts than games played. As you guys mentioned, subbed into pinch run for Paredes on Sunday's game after Isak tied it. But Josh, going back to your point, there was two outs already and he was on first. So I don't understand that decision. And Charlie, as you mentioned, immediately gets picked off on first, gigantic brain fart there, and then commits the fielding error, which I agree he's been playing outfield more as of late, but his primary positions that he's been playing is as an infielder in his career. So it's hard for me to even make excuses for him when that's supposed to be his natural position. They moved him to the outfield because there was more opportunity for him to make the roster out there, but was really frustrating to see. And I know it's not on one person, but like I said, when you look big picture and you're trying to look at who are the tent poles of this team, watching one of the guys who was supposed to be one of your big prospects just really suffer at the major league level is hard to witness when you're talking about the health of this team long term. Now, Houston hosts the first place Guardians, fresh off of taking 3 of 4 from the Orioles. They are in middle of pack in offense and pitching, so not a daunting task, but at this point, every series seems to be a daunting task when you have a patchwork pitching staff the way that Houston does. What will you guys be looking for in this series?
The Guardians don't hit much, so if the Astros can't get a few of these guys out. And the rotation, I mean, it's a mess. It's also seriously under-talented. And as you touched upon, Brandon, that, oh, well, if only they had Javier and Imai. Yeah, because they'd shown so much. Hunter Brown is no getting around that. A devastating blow, but he'd still pitch only 1 out of every 5 games. So it's Arrighetti followed by who? Weiss and then Lambert, all on 4 days rest. And not that the panacea is awaiting at Sugarland, but they started Jason Alexander on Saturday, Miguel Ulloa on Friday. So those guys couldn't even come in, you know, the 6-man rotation if you didn't want to be going with guys on 4 days rest. But hey, they did re-sign Brandon Belak over the weekend. He's down in the minor leagues. And speaking of the minor leagues and following briefly on Bryce Matthews, you know, he was thought to be a little bit of a reach when Dana Brown took him late in the first round. He had one really good year at Nebraska, but the book was, yeah, he has bat-to-ball contact issues, and so you crossed your fingers on that and hope the athletic development would overcome. It hasn't to this point. Dana Brown's second first-round pick was the catcher, Walker Yannick. While Yiner Diaz continues to look like the 7-year-old with the blindfold swinging wildly at every pinata in the room, Christian Vasquez over his head for his 20 at-bats, but there's no future in him. I think it was last time out that we mentioned their AAA catchers are 35-year-old Carlos Perez and 30-year-old non-prospect Cesar Salazar. Well, that's Walker Yannick, almost 24 years old, first-round draft choice 2 years ago. Starting the week Monday, he's batting 140 at AA. That's 140. The clock's ticking on Dana Brown, because no matter if he kills the draft upcoming at the All-Star break, well, no, that draft's going to impact the 2026 Astros. So if this team doesn't self-rescue, very good chance that Dana's in real trouble, obviously, with Joe Espada.
Well, let me ask you this. Based on how his draft picks have been working out so far, do you want Dana running this upcoming draft? I think that's something Jim Crane really needs to ask himself.
Well, even if Dana Brown does kill it in the draft, we won't know that for
3 years,
several years to come. Like, so the truth of the matter is that should he kill it in the draft, the most likely outcome is Houston's going to be sending him a fruit basket to the unemployment line once they litigate whether these picks are any good or not. But Josh, to your point, do you feel good about it? I can't feel good about it at this point. I can't feel good about the roster construction. I can't feel good about the draft picks. Just not a lot of good feels. The vibes are not immaculate, as they say in Houston right now. Final thoughts before we're out the door in this episode.
Quickly following on that, cold water, and I know there's always going to be an undercurrent, nostalgia plays, and what he accomplished. Jeff Luhnow's not coming back for a second go with the Astros. Remember, he sued Jim Crane for $22 million. They wound up settling, but I presume there's some scar tissue there both ways. I don't think they're kissing cousins. And Jeff Luhnow, would Jim Crane meet whatever his contractual demands are to leave all his soccer interests and other stuff? And Jeff Luhnow, while an extremely confident person, he has to have enough awareness that Act 2 could not go as well as Act 1. So I never say never, but I'll go very close to never on that. We mentioned the Guardians, who always seem to know how to pitch. 6 of the next Astros 7 series are against teams that were in the postseason last season. At Cleveland, then home for the Yankees, then the brief respite at Baltimore, then at Boston, home for the Dodgers, at Cincinnati, Reds were only win because the NL wildcard picture was weak. And then a 4-game series here with the Mariners. If the Astros go another 8-15 over these next 23 games, their season could appear to be over well before the All-Star break. But that doesn't mean they absolutely positively can't turn it around. But with this pitching staff, it does.
I'll be watching for Arrigetti's start. You got to win every game with him pitching that you can. And that's after one good start from Arrigetti, but that's kind of the only hope we can cling to right now until Hunter Brown and these guys get healthy and Emi, who knows what the deal is with him. So they're going to have to lean on Arrigetti, score some runs, win his starts, and they'll get their opportunity in the opener against the Guardians.
Just think about that sentence. They have to win a Spencer Arrigetti start. And look, 3 years, $115 million was cuckoo and completely untenable given the Astros' overall payroll issues. But Framber Valdez has been excellent in four of his first five starts for the Detroit Tigers.
Indeed. One of my favorite Houston broadcasters, Bill Worrell, was in the Astros broadcast booth the other night as they were honoring him. And it was funny listening to him talk to Blummer and Todd because he was kind of speaking empathetically as someone who's had to call games during bad seasons. So listening to him talk, he kind of was saying the quiet part out loud, which this is not a good team. Although he was quick to point out that 15-30 start in 05 eventually turned into a World Series appearance for that team. But Roger Clemens, Andy Pettit, and Roy Oswalt are walking through that door. But what is their availability? Does anybody know? One last reminder, if you're watching on YouTube, be sure to click like on the video. And if you listen to podcast apps like Apple or Spotify, give us a 5-star rating while you're here. Reminder for Texans fans, go subscribe to our other podcast, Texans on Tap. We've got a draft preview posted there, and we're going to be live after the drafts on night one and night two, depending on how those draft picks play out. But for Charlie and Josh, I'm Brandon saying so long. Thanks for listening. And as always, Go Stros.
And that's the bottom line, because Stone Cold said so.